The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for Inside Hollywood. I'm joined by Lisa Cannon, entertainment presenter and producer. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Now, we have a lovely segment today for those that are aspirationally excited about becoming filmmakers and what that entails.
And how obsessed you have to be to push your project through. Because you have the idea, but then the idea cannot be real without money.
Absolutely. But then you don't always need money. And I had spoken to Jim Sheridan at length, brilliant Jim, one of our finest directors. And he said, just get your iPhone out, Lisa. Any director who's, you know, has an aspiration or want to be on that side of the camera and create beautiful storytelling, just use your iPhone.
Okay, but you wouldn't make Apocalypse Now on the iPhone.
Well,
so let's talk about Francis Ford Coppola.
Well, of course, it isn't for the faint-hearted making a film anyway. And it's kind of for those dreamers, you know, who want to try and curate wonderful work. And, well, Francis Ford Coppola, I mean, he's absolutely fantastic.
Where was he at that point in his career? What had he made so far?
He had made amazing movies. The Godfathers, he had worked on Patton. He was a screenwriter for Patton. Francis Ford Coppola is an incredible director aside. So with all of his Oscar noms, Oscar wins, he found it really difficult to make Apocalypse Now, even with or without any money. Studios think that they offer you money, but actually to make something was more ferocious. So he remortgaged his house, he poured in his own millions, he nearly had a breakdown, and he didn't just risk his money, he risked his sanity. He put 30 million of his own money into the project, and he has a beautiful home in Napa Valley. That was borrowed heavily against that future project. But here he is talking to Howard Stern. Everybody knows Howard Stern, you know, the great broadcaster in the US, about how difficult it was when you think of the caliber and kind of the echelon of directorship that he is, that he had to do this in order to make Apocalypse Now. If anyone's seen it, it's 1979, a brilliant movie. Was it worth it? But here you go. Have a listen to this. It's interesting.
Were you in a panic when you were bankrupted three times? I mean, the reason that happened is you put money into your own films and if the film didn't do well financially, that's it. You were wiped out.
At a time when interest was 27%, I owed the Chase Manhattan Bank $32 million when I was in my 30s.
What would possess you to do that? Here you were, this huge, successful director. Mm-hmm. You're a guy who was so respected as a writer and a director. Everyone in Hollywood knows you don't put up your own money. You let a studio put up the money. What would possess you to do that?
What happened was I had made The Godfather, and then I made the one I wanted to make, The Conversation, and then ultimately Godfather 2, and I had, you know, I had 5 Oscars and 2 first prize of the Cannes Festival, and nobody would let me make Apocalypse Now. I went around hat in hand with all these awards and this, you know, success, and that they, you know, because even if you are even the directors you know who are so successful, they can't really make the movies that they have in their heart that they want to try, even if once in a while, to do something personal.
Right.
So I just was going to do it anyway, and I went off to the Philippines, and I got money from France and money from here, but I had to guarantee the budget because
you had a burning passion to make this film. You knew it would be great.
I wanted to make the film, and if you want to make something personal, you ultimately have to put up the money or try to.
And he said, my greatest fear is that I won't go bankrupt. It's to be thought of as a failure.
Exactly. And you would think when listening to that clip, when you asked me what movies did he make, well, The Godfather, I mean, there's no need to even continue after that sentence.
So you'd imagine to be throwing money at it.
Absolutely. And he said he found it really difficult to get the money.
I mean, it wasn't an easy movie to make.
No, not an easy movie to make. And of course, Marlon Brando was in it, if people remember, very erratic behaviour on set. They'd monsoon floods. And actually, poor Francis Ford Coppola had a heart attack on set as well. So at one point, he threatened to kill himself. Oh, God. Yeah. What a cinematic landmark that movie
let's
was.
Let's go back to another genius, or this clip, the longer version of it, he talks of himself as always being described as a self-styled genius. Orson Welles trying to make a movie.
Toast, Jedediah, to love on my terms. Those are the only terms anybody ever knows.
You know, my first picture would never have been made, never in a million years, if the producer had lived in Hollywood, had any knowledge of Hollywood. It was a total accident, total piece of luck. Like winning $600,000 from a quarter in a jackpot, and it couldn't go on, and I knew that because they took my next picture away from me and butchered the end of it. I was going to show them that they were wrong, and I have spent the rest of my life showing people, trying to prove that what is said is wrong, and that's been an enormous waste of spirit, and of energy.
So he spent his life trying to justify himself.
He did indeed. That was actually the last time Orson Welles ever spoke. He died a week later after that clip we just played. And, you know, everything after Citizen Kane, he took every job possible, TV jobs, ads, even cartoons to fund his films. And what was said in that piece there, he kind of clashed with the studios post Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane is renowned, I suppose, as being one of the most amazing films ever made. Mm. Scorsese will say it was a benchmark for him becoming a director and so forth. But he became fiercely independent.
He's an extraordinary director, because if my favourite bit of Orson Welles is A Touch of Evil.
Yes.
And the wonderful opening continuous shot in the opening sequence of that movie is a complete masterpiece.
I mean,
they didn't have Steadicam in those days. They didn't have all the gimmickry they have nowadays. So even when you look at the continuous shots, say in Goodfellas and so on, they pale in comparison to what Orson Welles achieved.
Remarkable.
You know, with the technology of his time.
Absolutely. And I always encourage people when they listen to The Slot, you know, go back and revisit some of the movies we're talking about, because it's nice to hear them, but also seeing them as well is brilliant.
Let's move on to Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, look, everyone loves Christopher Nolan, and people think, oh, he just kind of came out of nowhere, you know, of course, because the Batman movies, The Dark Knight. But actually, Christopher Nolan has been working steadily behind the scenes for years and years and years. He's a wonderful director. He has an obsession with film, which I suppose every director has to have. But this grit, this sacrifice, everything that people say you need to be a director is Christopher Nolan personified. So a movie that he made in 1998 called Following is a brilliant movie, and he shot it on weekends while working full time. So there's no excuses for anyone. If you want to film direct, there's ways around it. So him and his friends had day jobs, and they shot on Saturdays, sometimes just maybe getting 15 minutes of usable footage a week. And he used natural light. He shot it in black and white. You know, he used leftover bits of 16mm film stock and rehearsed extensively, so each take would count, because it's very, very expensive to film on film.
I mean, nowadays with your iPhone, you can do it again and again and again.
Well, exactly, exactly. And this is 1998, but his budget was only $6,000, funded by his own savings. And, you know, he had a degree from university, but he used his time like DramaSoc. Like, I was in DramaSoc in Trinity, where, you know, you kind of earned your stripes, or you tried out. Can I act? I don't know. Well, let's try DramaSoc. So he tried with other directors and actors to be very collaborative, and he edited on his home computer and carried his little reels in a duffel bag and everything. But this indie spirit, of course, cottoned onto him in Hollywood, and then, of course, he was given bigger budgets. This led to Memento and eventually then The Dark Knight. Let's hear a little bit from him about how he started out and not going to film school. It's quite interesting.
I'm a self-taught filmmaker. I never went to film school. I never studied filmmaking in any way. I started making films when I was a kid, when I was, I think, 7 years old, making films using my dad's Super 8 camera and little action figures, doing stop-motion films, a little bit of animation and a certain amount of live action. And I just carried on making films as I grew up. And over the years, they got bigger, hopefully better, but more elaborate. And there never really was a period in my life where I completely stopped doing that. So I was always moving up, eventually from Super 8 to 16mm films. And then I think what Following represents is kind of the peak of what I was able to do on my own, or just with friends, just using our own resources and borrowing equipment and sort of using the things around us to make a film.
So, no excuses.
No excuses. There is one I really tried to get a clip for you today, Pat, from Deborah Granick, which is Winter's Bone. If you've never seen it, it launched Jennifer Lawrence's career and, of course, nominated for four Academy Awards. She worked with local communities and cast unknowns. She couldn't afford the big stars or studio locations, so she partners with locals in Missouri to create, you know, this kind of incredible foray for the movie. And everybody slept in motels, slept in their cars. I mean, so many directors do crazy things, even...
Let's talk about El Mariachi.
Yes. So, you know, aside from Darren Aronofsky, who raised $60,000 by approaching 60 people to invest 100 each, Robert Rodriguez is an amazing director. A little bit left field, if one would say. He actually became a human lab rat to raise the $7,000 for his movie Il Mariachi in 1992. And he entered a clinical drug trial to raise cash, spending weeks in a research facility. I couldn't do something like that. But I like the other idea that Darren Aronofsky had. During the trial, he wrote the movie, sketched the storyboards on napkins, and then used non-actors, borrowed gear, and filmed in Mexico. Do you want to have a listen?
Yeah.
Okay.
El Mariachi.
Just the scrappiness that we went out and shot with whatever we had, just to get the movie done. because I'd only done short films. I didn't know how much work it would be to do a feature. And we got it done in 2 weeks, but it was just a lot of work. So if something came and it wasn't exactly right, we'd be like, nobody's going to see this anyway. And we would just do it not having any idea that it would be screened at the Sundance, much less brought back 20 years later. I would have spent more money. I would have been borrowing all kinds of things. I would have ruined the movie. So I'm glad I didn't know anyone would see it.
How much money did you make the movie for?
For $7,000. It was shot on film, though. Now it could have been made for like $700 if we shot digital. I was a medical research lab rat. I did that many times to fund my other short films. But this one was, I was in a hospital for 30 days testing the, it's actually, I think it's Lipitor, the drug that brings down cholesterol. I tested that.
Well, his heart's in good nick then.
It must be. Well, there's a wild unconventional way to make your money for movies. But there you go. You have to have a passion for it. But there's no excuse.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.